Welcome to the SMA News Today podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer. I have SMA Type 2, and I am a columnist and forums director for SMANewsToday.com. Welcome to the SMA News Today podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer. And joining me today is Patricia Panzerino, who also goes by her stage name Pidgey. And she is a woman with type 2 SMA, a singer and songwriter who is getting back into that career. And we're really excited to talk about that. She lives in Cape Cod, Massachusetts. And we're excited to have her here today. So, Pidgey, we're really excited to have you today.
I'm excited to be here. Thank you so much for having me today.
Absolutely. I'm really excited to talk about everything from your music career to just living with SMA. So we will get started in just a moment. But before that, if everyone could please listen to a brief word from our sponsor.
This podcast is brought to you by Genentech, the makers of a treatment for SMA. Whether you are living with SMA or are the parent to a child with SMA, make a choice today that could impact your future. Visit treatmysma.com to see why treatment matters.
Okay, so Pidgey, to start off, can you just tell listeners a little bit about yourself and what it was like for you growing up with SMA?
Oh my goodness. I am 63 years old. One of the oldest, I believe, if not the oldest, with SMA type 2. I am living with SMA. That's the in bold letters. Living a great life with SMA. I was raised on Long Island in Massapequa, New York, before the ADA. And my parents had previously had another child who was 12 years older than me. So on that part of my life, she was a built-in mentor. Before I even knew what a mentor was, I was a little girl. We had a brother. He was did not have SMA, and he was the middle child. I was the baby, and my parents worked very hard to mainstream me. They were all about inclusion. I went to public school. Back then, they would not assist me with any of the care. So my mother came to the school every day to take me to the bathroom and bring me to the cafeteria and open up my lunch. And back then, of course, my hands were stronger. As everyone knows, SMA is progressive slightly. So they were very into giving us the best experience and the best life ever. So she fought really hard with the system to get me in. I was bright, did very well in school. There was a time where when the kids were young, they were very excited to help me. I want to wheel your wheelchair. I want to help you. But then they started getting older. Fourth, fifth, and sixth grade were very tough, because they didn't want to help me. So there was a bit bullying involved and teasing, which was very difficult. My mother used to say, you know, not everyone's going to like you. It was a hard balance between our not wanting to make waves for fear that they would put me in a special school, and I did not. I know that's a great thing for some people, but mainstreaming is, to me, very important. So I was mainstreamed. Junior high and high school were much better. College, I went to Hofstra University in New York, lived in the dorms. That was my first experience with a personal care attendant. That I always hired them myself. I've been doing that over 40 years. It's a lot of work. Independence is a full-time job. And my father was very creative, including me. And we grew up in the water, and He worked very hard, and I was fortunate to have, we had a boat. And what he did was, it was a big boat, and he rigged up a horror lift so I could sit on the flying bridge and pilot this 31-foot boat. So he was like MacGyver, my father, you know, the ship. He could take a paperclip and a shoestring and make, I'm being facetious, but he was very creative. So there were, you know, before the ADA, taking a walk on the sidewalk, you look for a driveway to go down and cross the street. There were no curb cuts, none of that. My sister, Connie Pantorino, who has since passed away, she was very active in all of the disability rights. If you Google her, there's like pages and pages. So I really, I was blessed to grow up in the family that I grew up in. So, and we were all very musical too.
And that's something I definitely want to get into. And before we get into that, so with your sister, you mentioned, you know, she was a big mentor to you and she was very active in the disability rights movement. How did her experiences in school and growing up compare to your own?
Well, you know, it was funny that you said that. I was thinking about that. When she went to school, now she was born in 1947. They rigged up an intercom from her house and she went to school with an intercom. She did not go. They could not accommodate her. So she had to sit home and they'd say, good morning, Connie. And I don't know how they did it, but they had an intercom into the class. And then in high school, she finally went to Massapequa High School and was mainstreamed. And then she went to Hofstra also, like I did.
That's fascinating. I think back to like documentaries I've seen, like Crip Camp, for instance, about the evolution of the disability rights movement. And, you know, and I read Judy Heumann's book, and I think a lot, you know, from that generation were going to like specialized school, but I never heard of that, especially the technology like that at that time that could do that. That's, I don't know, that's fascinating. But yeah.
I knew Judy. She was friends with my sister. And she knew me when I was very little, like kindergarten age. She's amazing. You know, things like going to high school and my friends were cheerleaders. I always wanted to be a cheerleader. So they would come over and we would yell the cheers. But now they have people with disabilities on cheerleading teams in mainstream schools, which I think is like, we've really come far, but we have a long way to go as well.
Absolutely. And yeah, Judy, I've actually had on this podcast as well. She's great. And it was an honor being able to speak with her. So that's really cool that your sister grew up with her. And then, yeah, let's circle back to, so your musical career and, you know, where that passion started. So you said that your whole family is very musically inclined. So can you just talk about early experiences, either with, you know, discovering your passion for music and playing?
Yeah, my mother always had music playing in the house, always. My father sang a solo at age 15 at the in a Carnegie Hall, New York City, and that was like, whoa. I mean, that was way before me, but my mother gave me piano lessons at age 6 because doctors did not know a lot about SMA then. It wasn't even called that. And they said, the more she moves, the better it will be. So she figured the piano playing would keep my hands going, which it did. And then I just loved it. And then, excuse me, I took lessons for 6 years, but then I would start just playing by ear too. I used to jam with the radio, or then they bought me an organ when I was 19. And that was like my keyboard introduction. So I became a keyboard player. And I just had a passion. My brother played the drums. He had a band, but, you know, I was his little sister. So he'd be like, no, you can't be in the band. But then I made my own path and sang, played the keyboards for years. And I played a lot by ear. I could pick something out of, you know, you could say, play this. Like one time, my friends and I were jamming about 10 years ago to While My Guitar Gently Weeps. And I played the intro on the keyboard. And the person I was with said, when did you learn that? And I said, just now. They were like, whoa. So I have an impeccable ear. I'm very blessed with that. Very thankful. And then I was a founding member of one of the first, if not the first, organization for people, musicians with disabilities, called the Coalition for Disabled Musicians. And we formed bands. And that was great because it was a good experience to play with other people who had challenges like myself. So I didn't feel intimidated. And then it built me up musically, self-esteem. We were in the news, newspapers, all over Long Island. We played. I got into other bands. After that, always was jamming and forming bands. So, and here I am now with my newly released solo album called Just Breathe.
That's fantastic. And can you talk about the process of that too? Like, you know, putting together a solo album, you know, what kind of music you're inclined to, all of that. What was that whole process like with putting it together?
Well, first of all, I am remarried. I was divorced in 2008 and reconnected with a friend from college who I actually had a crush on. And we got married. His name is Vinny. And we didn't even know in college that we both were interested in, we played music. And we were jamming one day and I was like, why don't we form a band? So we did. That was about 10 years ago. It was called Ellipsis. And I have to stop one second. May I stop for a second?
No problem. Oh, yeah, no problem. No problem.
1 second. Hi, I'm sorry.
Hopefully no problem. No worries. No worries at all.
I can start over with that part.
Yeah.
So we So I said, why don't we form a band? So we did, and it was called Ellipsis, and we did a mini tour in New England and New York, and it was really fun, and we recorded an album on which I played keyboards and sang, and then my ability to play, I kind of lost my ability to play, so I started focusing on singing, but not too much. Like I was singing in, we had a band at my church I was going to for a while, and I sang with them. It was contemporary Christian, so rock and pop. And but I had noticed my stamina and breathing getting a little bit worse. Mm-hmm. Now, this is where Genentech enters the picture. They were ready. My respiratory doctors was saying, maybe you need some kind of a ventilator on your chair that you could take a breath once in a while just to boost your breathing. I was very upset. I was like, well, okay. And then right after that, I started everything. And in a week, I was like, wow. And everybody was like, Pidgey, your like face is brighter, your breathing is better, you're speaking louder. So I called a friend that I know that's very famous, especially in New England and actually all over the country. Her name is Christine Ullman. She's the lead singer for Saturday Night Live, and she's on many albums in many bands. She has her own band called Christine Ullman and Rebel Montez. And I said, do you give voice lessons? And I told her about the medicine, the treatment. She said, that's great. So we started voice lessons, do video chats because of COVID. It was during COVID. And I was showing her some of the stuff. I started writing more and singing. And she was like, this stuff is great. You need to record. And I did. And it's really everything. I mean, you know, I didn't get up and walk, which I never thought, you know, whatever it does well. And wherever you're at in your progression, you know, it depends on your atrophy. But my main things are my voice, my projecting, and that's it. You know, I mean, it's been really good. So then I recorded and had my total, like, amazing. It's been charting on the American music charts. And it's been played on some radio stations, at least 100. Community and college radio, FM. And in the spring, I'm going to start doing some shows. I have great musicians that are on the album. Christine is a backup singer, and she's amazing. She did a lot of singing. And one of the songs, Kick Ass Boots, we do a little cute little banter at the end about getting rid of this man that's not treating me right, you know, the whole typical story. So
that's fantastic. And I'm, you know, it's so cool to hear just that whole evolution of your career and then your treatment journey. And I do want to get more into that in just a minute. If ever could please listen to one more brief word from our sponsor.
This podcast is made possible by Genentech, the makers of a treatment for SMA. If you're living with SMA, the subtle changes that happen from one day to the next can be hard to notice until a key function is lost. Many people find that these changes can impact their life, not just physically, but also emotionally. Since the progression of SMA is relentless, taking action now is important. If you've waited to go on treatment or were told there were no treatments for you, now might be the time to talk to your doctor. Breakthroughs in science have led to more options than ever before in treatment and care. Choosing a disease-modifying treatment can make a difference. Why wait? Visit treatmysma.com to see why treatment matters.
Okay, so scaling back to your treatment journey for just a minute. So, with SMA treatments having, you know, started to come out and be FDA approved in the last few years, what was just like the mental and emotional effect like for you of starting treatment, pursuing it? Did you have any anxieties going in? I know that's several questions in one, but
I can handle it. When I was a little girl, I used to daydream about if they found a cure. And I had little daydreams like, what if it happens in the middle of the night? What if my mother gets a call from the doctor? Will she like drag me in my pajamas? Will she get me to like all that childhood stuff? And then you get older and you don't really think about, it's just, this is the way it is. You know, you don't really have that expectation. And then all of a sudden, they start rapid firing. different treatments, different, they found a gene, they found this, they found that. I did not want to do the spinal spinraza. I didn't feel safe enough with that. So I just waited. I was worried about the insurance paying for it. The day I found out that the insurance did accept it, I cried like crazy, joyful. And then, you know, reading about it, it's an mRNA splicer. I'm like, am I giving growth 3 heads? Like, what are they doing? So I spoke to a friend of mine was a scientist, and he explained it. He's like, a lot of drugs do that. So the first dose, I had my pal, patient advocate liaison. She goes, you're going to take it on screen. We're going to do a Zoom call. I'm like, okay. So I was fine. I was pretty nervous, but I was fine. And no side effects. I noticed if I eat something, I can't eat too much sugar for some reason. It seems to, I crash harder with a lot of sugar, but who cares, you know? That's the only thing I noticed. What else was I going to say? But, you know, it's funny because I'm not getting political, but with the COVID vaccine, everybody's like, it's an RNA. I'm like, listen, dude, I'm taking it every day for SMA, and it's working. Not the COVID vaccine, but an mRNA therapy. So, and people are like, really? So, you know.
It is fascinating what, you know, society can learn from our community and other disabled communities.
Yeah.
Both in that. But, well, that's fantastic. And so now that you are getting back into, you know, music more full time and you're going on tour, can you talk about that? What it's like going on tour, performing live, and just, you know, what do you really like about the live performance aspect?
This part of the interview may rile some people up, which we need to do to get some advocates. The ADA requires a line of venues to be accessible, all of them. So pretty much they're all accessible. But you know what? The stages, they're not always accessible. It's like, what do you think? People with disabilities don't have talent? There was one show 10 years ago with Ellipsis, the band I was in before, my solo band. That band broke up, but it was a great experience. My husband and I, he was playing guitar. We get there. I couldn't get on stage. And I was in the bathroom crying. He's like, Pidgey, do you want to leave? I'm like, no, we have to do this. And he was like, look, I'm going to play on the floor with you. But I was so angry. So that's an open door that everybody needs to fight for, you know? Because by not being accessible, they're not tapping into a community with a lot of talent, you know?
Oh, I grew up a theater student, and I'm actually getting kind of back into that world now. And oh, it's one of the main things is, you know, inaccessible stages and then transportation and all these factors that it's a shame because it keeps a lot of great disabled artists from really immersing themselves in the live performance aspect.
Yes, I love live performance because it's a way to connect with your audience and to really bring them joy in their own experience and emotions. The music I have on my album that I wrote is very relatable. A lot of people have gone through the things I sing about. So what I like to do is bring comfort, validation, and hope to people. And that's the greatest way. You know, even singing in the studio, recording, I imagined an audience on the other side of the microphone. And that was because my teacher, Christine Ullman, taught me that. She said, even in the studio, you have an audience, because whoever isn't listening to your album, you know, they're not maybe there then, but so that really helped me to sing really from my heart and from my soul. So, but I'm very excited about touring. Probably to start being in May.
That's fantastic. And are you trying to do like kind of around the States, or are you mainly doing in your area? How far does this tour extend?
Well, it's all about money. So I would like to do New England. I would love to have sponsorship if anybody out there is interested, because I do have musicians that I play with that, you know, you need to pay them. You know, we're not going to play in bars. We're mostly play in small venues, you know, more of, bars. Bars are like, I did that already, and people don't really watch you. They drink and hang out. But I really have messages in my music that I'd like to convey to people. So, we're trying to work on some sponsors. I have some amazing musicians on my record. I have people that used to play with Johnny Winter, Edgar Winter, Cyndi Lauper. I have Libby DeVito from Billy Joel's band played drums on three of my songs. I have really great, they were amazing, amazing. And I recorded in Connecticut at Horizon Music Group, and they were very accommodating with making it, you know, be like using rooms to do my personal care and things like that.
That's fantastic. And I wish you the best on getting sponsors and, you know, making your music, you know, accessible to all people all over the world. That's great.
Yeah. One thing that people don't really know, that, you know, my album is selling. A lot of people stream music, and streaming, there's a whole movement, because when people stream for free, the musician makes a fraction of a penny. So that's different now. It's made it harder for us musicians to get some money back, you know, from investing in recording. You know, it's wonderful. But the business end, with streaming, people are like, well, I don't really buy albums. But, you know, my CD has a 12-page booklet with all the lyrics, pictures, some thank yous, and it's really nice, you know, but that's just my own little plug.
No, absolutely. I mean, it's an important conversation I think that a lot of musicians are having, and it's one of the things about the music industry and other arts industries that a lot of consumers don't really understand. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And then Pidgey, just kind of like getting toward the end here, but, you know, you talked about your marriage a little bit, and can you talk a little bit more about that and just your daily life? You know, what does your day-to-day look like?
Well, I have personal care assistants. That's been a little bit difficult, as we all know, since the COVID pandemic. A lot of people have changed their methods of working. More people are working from home virtually, and I, until they find a way to virtually help me get dressed, that's a challenge. So the workforce has definitely changed. So there's a lot of hiring and training, and, you know, well, you probably know. You know, getting up, getting dressed, having coffee, that's my go-to. Where's the coffee? You know, and then working on some music, some self-promotion, and other people have been helping promote me, and doing my warm-ups, doing some writing. I am married very happily. I actually was Miss Wheelchair Massachusetts, 2012. I have to tell you, that's where I did a lot of speaking engagements. And one of the things I loved was encouraging young adults with disabilities, young women. They're like, you're married? Yeah. You can go to college. You can have relationships. You can do anything. I have my own publishing company called Creative Perseverance Publishing. It's an LLC. And my mantra for my life is creative perseverance. That's my thing. And it's like, this is my phrase, is life is like a GPS. You may need to find an alternate route, but with creative perseverance, you will always arrive at your destination. That's my life. Like, let's figure out a way to do this.
That's a brilliant quote. That could use, I mean, I hope that goes, that spreads really wide. That's fantastic.
Yeah, I wrote that out, and that's really my life. You know, I travel. We were going down to Florida for some winter months for a while, and I would be driving down, have my PCA, I'd bring my lift for bathroom transfers right in the car, and we'd go into a bathroom, and she'd have like the deer in the headlights look. And I would be like, okay, move the garbage pail over here, put the lift over here, I'll sit over here. Oh, you just have to figure it out, you know? So,
no worries, all good. Well, I get just my last question. I know you kind of like answered with that motto, but do you have any advice for listeners out there, and particularly disabled artists who are trying to break into their respective fields?
Okay. Go after your dreams. Don't, you know, just keep going. There were days, in fact, one of my songs called The Finest Gift, the first line is, there are days. During those days when maybe you're a little frustrated, just take a breath, do what you can do, do something every day to get you closer to your goals. Network. Don't be afraid to tell people what you're struggling with. Find a mentor. My sister passed. Now I have Christine Ullman, who, when I do my music lessons and coaching with her, I tell her everything. Even if there's a day where I'm like, oh my God, I'm having a hard day with this. Don't try to hide. You know, I grew up pre-ADA, so we had to look better than we really were. Don't let them know you're too disabled. Well, that's stupid. What's too disabled? You know, you're living and breathing. You have a great life. And if you don't, you will. And sometimes there are days that things get hard. But network is great. Social media, there are so many groups out there. You know, you have to get some people in your corner. Nourish your creative side. That's really important. Christine, my mentor, always says self-care, especially, you know, if I played the keyboard when I used to play, it didn't matter everything else about my body. You plug it in and it works. When you're a singer, you have to take care of your body because your voice is your instrument. Drink a lot of water, keep your throat warm, don't get too stressed. You know, it's all about self-care, too. And I'm also a woman of faith, so that's a big part of my life is, you know, connecting with my God. I'm trying to think. I have a lot to say about that. Don't take no for an answer. If someone says, what are you doing? Well, talk to somebody else. Don't talk to people who are going to put you down and be negative, you know, about that. If you really know that you have a gift, you got to use your gift. And I also tell people, people talk about inclusion. Get out there as much as possible and be visible. Because one time in the 90s, I met my parents at a restaurant and I assumed it was accessible and it wasn't. And I was complaining. The guy came outside. I said, how am I supposed to get in here? He said, well, we don't really get many disabled people here. I said, do you ever think of why? So the more we're out there, the more we're visible. There is more of us. We're living longer. You know, I mean, it all across the board with healthcare, doctors, all of it. You know, we're out there. We're not going away. We have a lot to offer, just like everyone else. You know, creative perseverance. That's the two words that is my life.
Well, I think it's fantastic, and I think your story very much reflects that. So, Bizzy, I want to thank you so much for coming on today. This has been great. And
thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. And before we go, we'll put links in the description as well, but where can people find you and your music?
I have a website, pidgeysmusic.com. It's all things Pidgey. You can buy the CD, where to listen to it. I'm also doing motivational speaking in the spring as well. There are pictures on the website. There are reviews. I have had about 25 reviews so far, and they're all great. I said to my publicist, are you afraid to send me bad ones? He goes, there haven't been any. I was like, wow, I'm very grateful for that. So they can see my bio. Everything is there. It's all there. It's sure a one-stop Pidgey shop.
Fantastic. Well, we will put those links there in the description. And again, Pidgey, thank you so much for coming on today. And for our listeners out there, you can find more stories and conversations like this by subscribing to the SMA News Today podcast. You can also connect with us directly on our forums and follow smanewstoday.com for all the latest SMA news and perspectives. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer. Thank you so much for listening, and we will see you next time. Take care.
The information in our flash briefings and podcasts are provided for informational and educational purposes only. Be sure to tune in daily to SMA News Today for the latest news and perspectives regarding the disease. Discover more content that might be of interest to you at www.smanewstoday.com. And be sure to follow us on social media and join our SMA News Today forums, a trusted SMA community ready to welcome you anytime.